Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
German-based Lavinia is a rising talent in Berlin's vibrant music scene who brings a unique, compelling story to her musical journey. Born in Italy and raised in the UK, she found her passion for music after moving to Germany in her mid-teens. The challenge of adapting to a new language and culture led to her songwriting as a means of escape. Now, 5 years later, Lavinia has emerged as one of Berlin's most intriguing songwriters, collaborating with DJs like Bennett, Nicholas D., W&W, Timmy Trumpet, and Gabri Ponte. As she steps into the spotlight as an artist, Lavinia's debut single K.O. showcases her vibrant style and gives a glimpse into her exciting creative future. In addition, Lavinia's song Borderline, a collaboration with Eli Oakes, is making its way up the charts in several countries, including Germany and UK. Up next on Celebswand, we've got Lavinia.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me, first of all. And I live in Berlin and I make music. So I'm an artist. I'm a songwriter as well.
I know your first name is Lavinia, but how did you decide to allow that to just be your stage name as Lavinia without your surname?
It's actually a really funny story because, well, my artist name used to be Lavinia Hope. And then eventually I was having a talk with my managers and I think we all kind of like talked about the surname being really cool, but it sounds a bit like a kind of like a Christian singer, you know, because I mean, if people don't really know it's my surname, then it sounds a bit, you know, very like church music. Mm. And that's not really the kind of music that I do. And that's why we were like, yeah, maybe we should take that off.
At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, cool, I want to be creating music, I want to be in this world, and how did that journey progress?
So it's actually a funny story because I didn't dream of being a pop star when I was like a child. I used to be a sports gymnast and I wanted to actually go to the Olympics. That was my dream. I used to do artistic gymnastics. And then at I think it was 14, I hurt myself really badly. So I fell from the parallel bars and I like almost landed in a wheelchair. So it was really bad. So from that on, I said, okay, I can't continue doing gymnastics just because it's going to be too dangerous. And that was my real passion. And then after that, I had like 1 year where I was a bit kind of depressed because I didn't have any dream to follow anymore. And when I was 15, then I started just playing guitar and making music and writing songs and started playing small concerts. And eventually, like maybe when I was 16, I said, okay, I'm really going to do this and I want this to happen when I'm an adult. So that's what happened. Yeah, it's kind of like, I guess my second dream, funny enough, but no, it's my dream number one.
Understanding at the age of 16 that you wanted to do it, what were the next steps to allow it to become professional?
Well, I started playing concerts like in this town where I used to live, you know, these kind of like super small concerts where actually nobody listens to you or like on the street. And I used to post a lot of TikTok videos back in the day as well of me just singing. And I think I released 2 songs independently. And eventually I was scouted by a DJ in Berlin. And that's how he kind of brought me into the industry. So, yeah. That's how it happened.
For the listeners, you are in the dance music arena, creating dance music.
Yes.
So when you were doing your concerts and stuff like that, were you doing dance music or what genre of music were you doing?
No, actually, I wasn't. I was playing very acoustic music. So just like guitar and singing. And also the songs I used to play were kind of like classical rock songs, like Stairway to Heaven, stuff like that. And of course, also Wonderwall. That's a bit embarrassing, but we have to do what we have to do. Mm-hmm. And I also used to write more kind of like sad pop songs at the start. So I just came into dance through getting into the songwriting scene, kind of, yes.
So do you still create music in sort of the singer-songwriter space or you 100% focus in the dance scene now?
I'm 100% focusing on the dance scene. I do want to make it a bit more artsy in the future, but not the way that I used to do it, because it was kind of like very sad music what I did back in the day. I was going through my teenage phase and whatever. And funny enough, it's not really my jam, I would say now, because I love making music that is just so fun to make and that makes me happy. And that's why actually dance music is fantastic, but I still want to like up my level every time and make it kind of more artistically, maybe sophisticated. Yeah. So that's what I'm gonna do.
So when you were scouted and then the producers or the management or those people said, how about dance music? Were you like, okay, yes, let's do it? Or were there a little bit of reservations around doing it?
I just went right in with it. I fell in love with dance music, I think, in the first session. First dance music session that I did, just because it was so fun and so easy to do for me in comparison to like overthinking everything. And that's why I really, really enjoyed it from the start.
I know you collaborate with a previous Celebs Fun guest, Mr. Ellie Oakes.
Ah, yes.
Yes. You've done a number of collaborations with him. And so how did that partnership come to be?
I had been writing songs for maybe about a few months in the dance scene, and there I was unsigned. I was kind of working as a songwriter for a period, so not really writing for myself. But funny enough, then Eli and I met, and we started writing a few songs for his project, which was also really small back in the day in comparison. And he was saying, "Yeah, my manager and my label are kind of interested in talking with you." And so I had a meeting with them. And they first signed me as a songwriter, but I think like a month later, they said, "Yeah, I think we should do an artist project with you again, just because you're so young and you write really nice songs, and we think you have potential as an artist as well." And that was really fun because I thought, "Okay, well, I guess I'm going to be just a songwriter now." But then it turns tabled again.
The
The
tables
tables
turned.
turned again, and that's how my artist project started. Yeah, so we're in the same label now.
Do you still write for other artists as well?
Very, very rarely. I'm really focusing on my project now, but I did write a few songs for other artists that are out. For example, Lullaby by Bennett, and I think I wrote a tr Timmy Trumpet song and Gabri Ponte song. So it's all kind of still in the DJ world.
How do you create a song?
Oh, it's very funny. It depends. There's different ways, but usually. So I have this producer who is like super fire, and I always work with him. So he's my kind of main to go person, and we always start ideas together, kind of. So he either maybe starts the melody or I start it, and we start on keys or playing guitar, and then we always write the chorus first, and then when we have that, then we kind of find melodies for the verse and pre, and then I sit down and write my concepts, my lyric concepts.
I know it's all very secretive in your guys' world. What's coming up or coming out over the next period of time?
So I have one song that I've been teasing for a while, and like a lot of my fans have been really eager to hear, and that I'm dropping called Seven in the Club with Eli, of course. After that, Eli and I are dropping another song together that we also made, and it's called Calabria. Actually, that's going to be so fire, that one. I really like that one. So yeah.
Obviously, your songs flew up the charts in the UK and around the world. I'm a person that monitors the charts. I was like, oh, cool. These are interesting artists. And I wanted to interview both of you. And now here we are. When it explodes, was it a bit of surprise on your part? Or was it like, okay, we've built the foundation, we've put in the hard work, this is now just the next step?
Like the first time it happened, last year in July when I wrote KO, that was like supposed to be my first single as an artist with the rebranding. And when that immediately went super well, I think it has now 60 million streams or something. And that was a surprise, and it was super scary. And in fact, after that, I had like maybe 5 months where nothing felt good enough, and I was just trying to rewrite that song again, and I was a bit confused of how, like, I didn't really know what to do. But then when the other songs came out now, like after Borderline and all the rest, I really don't overthink them at all, and I really know what I'm doing, and nothing really surprises me or brings me down anymore. I kind of know what to do. And so now it doesn't really feel so random. Yes.
It was a situation that you're surprised of your success. And then it was trying to create something that was the same in order to maintain that. And then because that wasn't happening, it created chaos in your brain. Am I understanding correctly?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. I think it's never good to try and rewrite the same song or force it, because I feel like songs are just like things that happen once and that's the song. And if you just like try to rewrite another version, it's not going to work. And I think it really created some chaos in my brain. I couldn't let any new ideas that were maybe different like come in, you know.
I love me a CD. I sub-budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's a thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklets. I love listening to songs from one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you are aware, but there's a massive uptick of physical around the world.
Oh.
A couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Also last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. Now, there needs to be a large amount of exchanges every day for a product to be in this basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs, CDs have now been put back in that basket because they're flying again. And the research is showing that it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids that are diving into this world. Then you mentioned the streams earlier. We've got all these platforms that people stream music on. What are your observations of the music landscape at the moment?
Well, I think people really love fast-paced music that kind of like is a, they have a, I feel like you do really notice in the music that people don't have a long span of attention. And I mean, I have ADHD myself, so I get it. And I feel like that is a bit in the music as well. So it's like super hyper. And yeah, I feel like you really have to keep people's attention long enough, and it has to be catchy enough. So I think that's something that really stands out. And funny enough, I feel like people now are starting to care way more about the meaning of songs, because I feel like, I mean, what I hear from my colleagues as well who are songwriters, maybe 5 years ago you could have written some songs that had absolutely no meaning and were kind of like empty dance songs. Like, it was so easy to get a hit. And now it's so much about like the story behind the song and the lyrics. They have to be special, they have to be quirky, and I feel like that's something that people are starting to care about more and more, which I really love, because I love weird lyrics and stuff. So yeah,
it's interesting you say that, because I speak to a lot of people not in the industry. They just listen to music, so they don't write songs, you know, they're just listeners, they're fans and so forth. And often they'll hear the or be listening to a song, and I actually say to them, do you know what that song's about? And they're like, oh no, I don't know. I'm just listening. I just like how it makes me feel. And then I tell them, well, yeah, it's actually about this. And then they're shocked. They're like, oh, I didn't realize it, because they sort of listen to it superficially. They don't dive into it as much. Yeah. So it's good. And it's interesting that you saying that people are more getting more involved, which is really good, because then they are becoming more invested in what they are listening to and what they're consuming, which is really important.
Exactly, exactly. And yeah, it feels absolutely like it, because, for example, I don't know, like a song that just has like, you're in my head and in my heart and in my head and in my heart. I don't know, like, I feel like that is just a bit of a huge concept, for example. And I feel like maybe like 5 years ago, that kind of like concept could have worked. But now it's, it really has to be a bit more evolved.
A perfect song I can think of is Chandelier by Sia. So many people love the song, but they don't actually know that she was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And the whole song is about her staying sober. Have you got any live performances coming up?
I do, actually. I have a radio festival, I think, I'm not sure if it's this month, with Energy. It's kind of like this German radio station. And I also have a show in Poland with Eli, where I'm kind of playing as a guest. And I think I have another two maybe or three things, but I can't really remember right now. So yeah.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
So I think it's like, it feels like back to the roots, because I started off as a kind of like a person playing on the streets. And so I just really love the feeling of the energy of the crowd and being able to sing your own songs and just see the people actually like give you, they give you a lot back, and that's what I love. And I feel like I'm my most authentic self when I'm on the stage, which I love as well.
Okay, so I'm that dude that's right up in front. I'm dancing, I'm jamming. I'm taking maybe a couple of photos, a couple of videos, and I put my phone away. I notice these days a lot of time that people are posting, they're tweeting, they're videoing for a lot of the time of the show. You reference about the audience giving you energy and stuff like that. Do you not feel that the phone takes away from that energy, or it's just where society is at this stage?
To be honest, actually, and because I always think about it, like, you know, when you maybe visit a city and then you take photos, you only take photos of the buildings you really like, and you don't take photos of, or if it's really bad, you know, I hope it's not that. And that's why it kind of feels a bit like, it feels really nice to know that people think it's so cool that they would actually film it and keep it in their phone. So I kind of see it more as that, or like a nice memory. And so I feel very honored when people actually film me.
You've had the experience of performing on the street, sort of busking. What is it like? You know, I've seen people do that, and it feels, I feel sorry for those people because they're trying so hard and people are just sort of walking past. And you've had firsthand experience. How long did you do that for, first of all? And what is that experience like?
Yeah, I think I did it for like 1 or 2 years, actually, almost 2 years. Well, first of all, it's not too bad money. Like, people do give you some money, actually. It helped me definitely pay my rent and stuff. And when you don't have any other kind of chance to play except from the streets, then you actually really enjoy it, because almost always there were people like that stopped to listen to me, even if it was just maybe for 5 minutes and maybe took a photo. And that is already like a small part of the feeling of playing a concert in a way. But there were times where it was, of course, horrible, where I got kind of like, I don't know, they told us, can you go and play somewhere else? Because this is like a restaurant here and we're tired of you. Or there's been some situations where I really didn't like it. I feel like at the start, maybe you feel a little bit of shame, because I remember I used to also play in the town where I used to live, and I was kind of like 18. And of course, it's sometimes embarrassing when you see like the people who know you like pass by and think like, oh, she must need money or something. But I think that embarrassment went away so fast, and it was really nice, and I had fun, and I didn't really care that much in the end. And you know what really is amazing about busking? Once you get to play live, like bigger shows, you feel so trained. You know, it's like, I don't know, it's like a person who trained for the marathon, but they trained on like a dirt road, and it's so easy now to run on concrete.
So in fact, it's a fantastic training ground, and every single artist should do it for a year or two.
I feel like so too. Like, I really feel like it just helps me so much now to play live. Yeah.
In what way, though?
I already know how to use the mic well now, and I feel so confident because when you play on the streets, of course, you can't really hear yourself because you don't have in-ears. You can't hear yourself while you're singing. And so all these little things that make it so hard to make a good show, they all fall away, and you just like enjoy playing live so much. And I think you really learn how to do crowd work, which is quite difficult for some people, I feel like. And at the start, it was super difficult for me as well when I was busking, to actually get someone to even care about, you know, and to learn what to say, how to play your songs, and to really perform, you know. And so now it's super easy for me to kind of know what to do and how to work the crowd.
What you're explaining is, it's such an amazing training ground. And I think every artist, and I've just literally said this, every artist should have that training ground to help them, because it sounds like it also grounds you. It gives you a ground that when things catapult, you have this grounding of having performed on the streets, you know, that dichotomy of like the massive audiences and, you know, I was performing by a restaurant and they told me to go away. You know, it gives you that, the two sides of the coin, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. I'm so thankful that I got to do that, because I feel like maybe it can be dangerous that some people, when they get more successful, they kind of like lose where they come from. And that's something that I never want to happen to me, because I really care so much about just being grounded and like knowing where you come from and what your roots are. And just like to always think like, I am so lucky to be here. It's not obvious that I can get here. It's amazing. And just just to always be grateful. So yeah, that really helped me because I've seen the other side, and I know that like the majority of people like play do music like this, and it's if not, it's just as worthy, but it's actually way more amazing what they do, you know.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question tomorrow, the next day, or the next day, I know your answer will be different every time. I'm not saying favorites, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five other artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you could think of specific songs of theirs, what songs would you play?
Ooh, okay. So I'm going to start basic. Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. I actually listen to super random stuff. Like also, I think maybe Holy Ghost by O'Malley, which is like an Afro artist that I love. And then, I don't know the artist, but like I've been listening to this song a lot recently. It's called Mountain at My Gates.
Okay.
And it's this indie song. I really love it. Oh, this one is so funny. Breeze Blocks, I think it's called, by Alt-J.
Okay.
I love that song as well. And the last one is maybe Smells Like Teen Spirit, Nirvana.
So Lavinia, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
Well, a basic message first, maybe just like if you have a dream, just really don't give up on it and fight with every cell of your body to make it come true. And another thing that I would really want to tell people to do more is learn how to train your gut feeling, because I feel like some people are so disconnected to themselves that then maybe they don't even know what they really want to do, or they can't make the right choice because they're not connected to their gut feeling. So train your gut feeling. It's the most powerful thing you have, and it helped me like throughout my life so much, or just through starting to listen a bit more to it. And then the more you kind of train to listen to your gut feeling, the more it happens. Yeah, that's something that just helped me so much. So that's a really nice thing I would like to give forward.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.